Hello, podcast world. Welcome to episode 111 of Run Chats with Ron Runs NYC. This episode is from my IG live convo with renowned coach James McCurdy of McCurdy Trained on the exciting upcoming Backline McCurdy Micro on 10/14/23 at Rockland State Park, New York. The why? To provide the greatest opportunity for athletes to achieve the Olympic trials qualifying time and faster. We discuss bottle support for all participating marathoners, tangents, pacers, and why this course, reported by Runner's World magazine as the fastest loop in the country, gives runners the best opportunity to earn their place on the Olympic Trials Marathon starting line February 3rd, 2024. In part two, we explore the McCurdy Trained origin story, the ethos and DNA that has helped build such a strong and powerful team, and a few athlete success stories. For anyone still dreaming of earning their OTQ or looking to gain some valuable McCurdy Trained coaching insights, this episode is for you. Hoping you all enjoy the listen.
James, what's up?
Hello, my friend.
How are you, my friend? Man, it's good to see your face on the other end.
I know. I feel like, we bumped into each other. Was it Berlin of 2019?
It was actually the Houston Half, believe it or not.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Yeah. You had a couple of runners down at the Houston Half in 2019, which is where I ran last. And we hung out in that big, that underground, massive facility. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But that's our only face-to-face, our only in-person. So So it's good to see you, man. It's
an honor to be on. I'm really excited about being on. I mean, obviously, you know, you've had a few of our friends and athletes on over the years, and it's always nice to get a chance to hear from them directly, unbiased, and just listening to them talk about their experience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Allie Ayers was my very first. She might have been my third or my fourth podcast episode. She's from New Jersey, a local runner that we know each other. She came over from Summit. It was our first one that we actually recorded live. When I say live, like physically, not at a race, like one of those things.
So that was like a coffee shop, right?
I'm actually in Weehawken. So I'm just right across the river. Right there, you know, Hoboken, Weehawken. We're just on the other side of the river and got a nice facility.
How long have you been near the Hoboken area?
I've been here for a couple of years now. Okay. I lived in the city for a very long time, but I've crossed over to the other side, and I actually have a lot more clients in New Jersey. So this is kind of a little bit more convenient for the business and the personal life, but, it's fun to see. We got people joining us. I see my man Printer Run just joined down there. We got people joining. So thank you all. I got the great James McCurdy of McCurdy Trained here. We're excited, man. This is going to be super fun. IG Live. We just thought it'd be a great opportunity. There's a lot of runners out there, both men and women, who are on that cusp, if you will, or maybe have been close to hitting a standard, and they're trying to find their ideal race, James. And we all know the big races that exist. We all know the opportunities that exist, going to Boston or Chicago or CIM or Grandma's or any of those type of races and those big profiles. Yep. But I think what's so unique about that smaller footprint race that you put on back in COVID times to try to help runners that were just stuck, and so many runners were just in that rut, man, of like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with my fitness? So I think, you know, you had that amazing experience of runners coming out to Flagstaff and running with you, putting a race like that together, helping people run super fast times. So this is our opportunity, man, to break it down and talk about the Backline McCurdy Micro on 10/14/23 at Rockland State Park. Let's get into it, man.
I mean, to kind of understand what it is we're trying to accomplish, we have to kind of go backwards a little bit. Going back to the McCurdy Micros that we put on with a few of our athletes and coaches, Coach Heather Knight Peck playing a major role, Esther Atkins playing a major role, my wife as well, Laura Galeazzo, one of our athletes, Nikki Drader, former athletes down in Texas, helped us host one, Courtney Allen as well out in Michigan. We all came together with this idea of trying to find ways to present a marathon that was in the times, so to speak, COVID conscious, where people could still earn their right to BQ. The OTQ wasn't really a thing then because it already happened and the window wasn't open, but it was really about the BQ or the first time marathon and just get it done. We saw so many races for the professionals. Even some of my own athletes were in the marathon project. They were in the Michigan Pro Ekiden race. They were a part of these specialized events, and we didn't see any of these events springing up for the masses. And we wanted to kind of step up and provide that opportunity. And now fast forward a few years later, and we find out that the Olympic trials standard has gone from 219 to 218 for the men and from 245 to 237 for the women. And what we all, I think, all of us heard collectively was this, I got to do what? And I think some people are getting really excited about the opportunity to find their best. And some people are, when that announcement was made, was, oh man, that's impossible. I don't know if how could I possibly get there? But what we've seen over the last year and a half or so, especially on the women's side, there are 114 or so women that have qualified for the trials as of right now, but 117, 118 men that have qualified for the trials. And they're not all fully sponsored professional runners. I mean, we're still hearing stories about 254 women that drop and trained their butts off, but dropped a massive amount of time and ran 236, and now they've earned their spot. One of our own athletes, led by Coach Sydney DeVore, she's a newer coach for us, Ari Hendricks, dropped an enormous amount of time to be able to qualify for the trials. She went from 3 hours to 251 to 250. To 247 to 243 down to 235 over the course of the last like 5 years. And we want to put on a race that celebrates the idea that this is possible, that this is something that people can attain. But we also want to provide an opportunity for these athletes to have the proper support in race. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest takeaways and biggest keys to success in our event in October.
Yeah, that's so well said, because that massive drop from 250 or 245 to 237 for the women, only one minute on the men's side, psychologically, when it was first announced, I think everybody was expecting it, because you had a field of 511 at 2020 down in Atlanta. I was lucky enough to go there and hang out and see it. Supposed to be boarding a plane for Tokyo to go run the race in 2020. And that was what our whole world just fucking turned upside down. You know, but yeah, great lead in. We've seen some amazing stories. I've shared some of those on my pod. Like you said, women just crushing from the 250 range down into the 236s, 235s, or even faster. So it's exciting as hell. And you always want to get that collective mindset going. And I think, you know, going to CIM, we've seen that it's a model and it's worked. Okay. There's great pacers and all that, but a smaller footprint race, like we just saw up at Rockland, where Roberta Groner just crushed the, you know, the 10, half marathon, 45 to 49 record by what, like 2 minutes or something crazy. I mean, they were throwing down crazy times because the course just sets itself up. Yeah. I mean, for good crowd, good cheering, but bottle support couldn't be better. Tangents couldn't be better. So talk us through that, because I personally haven't run there. I've been up at Rockland State Park and run up there many times, but I've actually not had the chance to run that course. And I know it's a little different than the half course you were mentioning to me, right? So maybe you could take us through what that's going to be like, and bottle support and all the good stuff that's going to help any of these men or women that have this big goal in mind take a shot.
Yeah. So we found this course via Heather Knight Peck. Coach Heather Knight Peck, one of the best runners in the world in her age, course record holder for her age group in Boston at 303.47 last year at 60. I mean, this woman is a dynamo. She knows her shit. And when she found this course and said, this is where we're going to run the McCurdy Micro, this is a fast course, we didn't have to question it. We knew exactly what she meant by it. And we knew that she had all her T's crossed and her I's dotted. But the course itself, from when we hosted a few years ago to now actually has been resurfaced in some spots. The pavement is smooth. It is crisp. It's clean. It's beautiful. There's no potholes. There's nothing out there that would kind of be a limiting factor, unlike some other road races that are out there. So having, I mean, that's the big reason why Berlin is such a great course to run. It's not that Chicago is slow. It's that Berlin's pavement is so much better than Chicago's. So you're going to run faster in Berlin on the same weather day. It's just better surface. Rockland Lake State Park has this amazing surface. It's a little under a 3-mile loop. So when the Trials of Miles team put on their half marathon, they did a little bit of an out and back to cover the missing distance. And then they ran 4 full loops to cover the full 13.1 and change miles for the half marathon. Our race, we're not going to do the out and back. We're just going to go around in circles. So the point of the McCurdy Micro, the backline McCurdy Micro is to, well, let me talk about that a little bit. We were looking at businesses that we wanted to partner with for this event. We know that we need to help, and working with Backline since June of 2021 has been an awesome experience. They reached out to us initially, to my wife initially, and there was like, you know, some delayed in Instagram messages, and then I started noticing them a little bit more. And when we reached out to them, we really liked the messages that they were sending. The future is female coaching. We really liked that messaging, inclusivity in their concepts. And when we asked them to kind of create some of our team gear, which was remarkable, they worked with us every single week on developing some really, really good quality team gear. Some of the lightest gear I've ever tried. I mean, the women's racing crop is less than an ounce. Like it's really, really high quality stuff. And we've been working with them faithfully for the last year and a half, going on 2 years. And when we reached out to them to partner with us on this, they jumped on the chance. They thought it was a remarkable idea. They really want to help. And we're in process and working with some logos and things like that. But we are so honored that they are the title sponsor of our race events, and we're going to be working hand in hand with them. But because of their support, it's going to allow us some freedom to ensure that any of the athletes that register for this race have the best opportunity they can possibly have to qualify for the Olympic trials, if not faster on the international side, even for the Olympic standard. So the nitty-gritty of the race itself, it's a 3-mile loop. They're going to run 8.9 times. And every athlete in the race, unlike most races out there, Chicago, New York, Indianapolis, even CIM to an extent, unlike most races out there, every athlete in our race that qualifies for this event is going to have a bottle support, the opportunity for bottle support if they choose to have it every lap. And that is a key factor.
Yeah, that's huge. And probably the single most important thing on a shorter course too, to be able to get fluids more regularly as well. So, you know, you think about it, elites are always going like pretty much every 5K, right? That's where their table service is at an elite race, elite marathon. So it's literally like a perfect setup. You can't ask for anything better. And having Backline is great too, because they're local, you know, footprint here as well. You know, they certainly have a presence here in this area. And their gear is amazing. I have a couple of singlets from them. It's incredibly great moisture wicking, an unbelievably good fit.
Yeah.
And your stuff looks great. And a good friend of mine is Brendan O'Leary from O'Leary. They use them as well.
Yeah.
A bunch of club teams. A lot of the New York City elite club teams are now having them make their gear. So I think they got a good presence here. And it gives you a little bit of a footprint to like the Northeast Corridor to help support it. And hey, man, we're going to get everybody out here at this race. I mean, I'll be hyping this up to CPTC for our runners that haven't hit the standard yet. We've got a pretty good group in already. But there's, with our team and the kind of athletes that you coach and some of the other great coaching groups that exist out there, these women and men have the ability to just drop when the stakes are high.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing for anybody who's listening right now, man. That's what you got to tune into, man. You know, maybe you're 4 or 5 minutes out and don't think it could happen. But race day is a different deal. And it doesn't
we had
45 or 50,000 people cheering for you. Sometimes the smaller race where you can run the tangents better and you're not fighting to get over to your table to get your bottle, or whatever you might be doing, man. You just want to make eye contact with your husband or wife while you're rolling by your kid. I think those benefits for you are really going to come to the forefront.
Yeah. We had a kid, Alexander Burks, run one of our Rockland races, and he was a 223 marathoner, kind of this on the cusper, right? Like this, man, if he just has the right opportunity, man, this kid could fly. And we weren't coaching him, right? Like he just heard about our race and said, I want to do this. He dropped 7 minutes and ran a 2:16:51 on this course. And now the course is even faster with better servicing. If you give the people the opportunity, you know, that's the thing. There's so many clubs out there that I was talking about this with Ryan Hall today. We bumped into each other a few hours ago, and he said even he has a few athletes that they're good, they're talented runners, but there's no guarantee that they're getting any support outside of a free entry in a race like Chicago. And that could be very, very limiting. You could have a 244 woman who qualified for the trials in 2020, who's been fit, who just needs a chance to run their best. And we want this to be as open and as inclusive as possible. We want as many athletes as we can possibly support out there who qualify for this race to give them that chance. They don't have to be with us. You know, I'm talking to clubs all over the country about this. I'm talking to teams in Canada. I'm talking to teams in England coming over. I've got a few athletes that are international that will be coming over for this race specifically because they don't want to risk their Olympic standard in a race environment like New York, where it's not because the course is so hard, where it's they are chasing a time. This is going to be one of the only time trial marathons in the entire country with the purpose of running the time. It's not a race, it is a time trial. It's to help you run the best possible marathon you can ever run.
Yeah, and you're giving them the tools. And it's exciting, man. I'm excited talking to you about it. So anything we can do to hype it, man. And listen, everybody who's checking in, man, say hello, wave down at the bottom. If you guys have some questions as I roll through with James, I've got a bunch of other topics we're going to hit about this race specifically. Then we're going to ask him a little bit more about his team and how that all came to be and some of his athletes as we move along. But if anybody out there is joining this convo because they're thinking about doing this race, they got questions about it, pop it in the comments below. Man, one of us will catch it. We'll read it. And we'll try to work it in because, you know, we want these things to be collaborative. It's super important. So, and by the way, thank you all for tuning in. So good stuff. And international too, man. That's cool. Let's get some flags. Let's get lots of people out there, man. Let's get rowdy and let's hype this thing, man.
And that's what's beautiful about this course. It's not just about the OTQ. There are many international athletes that live here that need an opportunity the same as the American citizens do, that if they could just prove that they are quick enough for the next level, that if they can run this time, they could get that entry into Chicago or Boston or New York City or Houston. They could get that next step into Berlin. But without that time, they won't get that chance. So this race is a valid legal race. It's USATF certified. It's on its way to the World Athletic Certificate as well. That should be happening inside of a month. It's a legal race, which means it stands for the Olympic standard as well. It fits within the confines of what a true professional would use to qualify for the Olympics, whether it's here for in the United States in terms of time-based or for international for selection.
That's so clutch because it meets all the criteria.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. Somebody's going to get on a plane and their budget's really limited because that's who you're speaking to. You're talking about non-sponsored athletes. You're talking about men and women who are moms and have jobs and dads and have jobs and they're working. And I just know one of my good friends, Lisa Waitman, just pulled off one of the all-time doubles in history, running 2:23, you know, over in the week before Tokyo and coming back and running 2:31. I mean, two marathons, 2 weeks, you know, Osaka, Tokyo, 2:23, 2:31. And, you know, I won't say out loud what she made for that because you know our sport, man. You're in it. You're in it all the way through and through the way I am. And it just breaks my heart sometimes that people are that good and give back so much to our sport, but yet they're not really getting, you know, that much out of it other than the love of the game, which is what we all do it for, right? That's why you're coaching. That's why I'm still running marathons at 62. That's why I'm doing the damn podcast. Yeah, Kylie, I see you, Jane. Yeah, that's for Lisa. That's our Aussie legend. I see you down there. Look, man, we just want to give people opportunities, right? You want to give them the tools to be successful. That's why you have your coaching platform, man. That's why you built this thing into what it is. And, you know, I want to use everything I've got to help hype this race and give people the opportunities to be successful and run their fastest time.
What questions specifically did you want to, my lamp went out. I think I just lost a light here, but at least I got the ring backlight. So I look a little, you know.
Dude, I like it. It's almost like a filter on IG. So, let's see. I have a couple of other basic questions. Yeah. So obviously we talked about the course. We talked about aid stations. What about pacers? People always want to know about pacers.
Yes.
What about pacers?
Yes. So the pacing situation is going to be very simple. If we have athletes on the male side that are aiming for the Olympic standard, then we are prepared with pacers for 207.30, which is a bit faster than the Olympic standard. And so we will be covered for that as a fastest time. We have on the male side as well, pacers ready to run 210. So we'll be covered for that. And then, of course, we are going to have pacers for 2:17:15, 45 seconds under the Olympic trials standard. And the reason why we want to do that is we want to give a little bit of a buffer, but still ride that straight line. We talk about bottle service. We talk about the concept of having that type of support, which is wonderful. But one of the things that limits athletes in races like Chicago, even Boston, even though it's point to point, there's a lot of curves on the road. So what we are going to do and what we are dedicated to doing is a full loop tangent line. If the road is doing this, all you have to do is run on this line and you will run 26.2 and X miles. If you stray a little bit, you're going to run a little over. I don't care what your GPS says, though. If you run on this line, you're running 26.2. Because anytime you're running around a curve, around a loop, it's going to be a little funky, right? GPS isn't 100% accurate, honestly, unless you're using a Coros watch, which is an amazing watch. But not everybody has. Oh, there we go. I didn't even see that. But outside of that, we want to make sure that an athlete knows and is confident with 100% certainty that if they run this line, that they are going to run exactly 26.2 and change, right? That they're not going to run 26.5 because they were following the curve of the road. They know exactly what they need to do at all times, stay in that line. So we're going to have our pacers do that. We're going to encourage our racers to run single file. So they're not shoulder to shoulder, right? Because this, we don't want this to be a race so much as we want this to be a time trial for success for the standard. And if we can run a single file or maybe just 2x2, then you're going to have the best chance of success to run the shortest distance possible. So male pacers, 207.30, 210, 217.15. On the women's side, if we find that we have some women that are aiming for the Olympic standard, we are also prepared for 226.50, right? And we'll probably have that pace group go off at 226.15 to 226.30, just a little bit ahead of that, just to provide a little bit of a buffer. We're also going to have a 230 pace group for those women who are aiming to run under that standard, possibly trying to get into the, use their time to get into Boston pro fields or whatever that might look like for them, or New York, or even earn a time for their own nation to earn a time for the Olympics for their country. And then we are also going to have a 2:36:15 pace group, specifically, again, a little bit of a buffer, but that pace concept of running that time to get as many people. The standards for our race, though, the standards for our race are 2:25 and under and 2:45 and under. We chose those times because of the demonstration that we've seen over the course of the past few years, the demonstration of what we saw from a personal best out of Alexander Burks, who won our race in the past. We didn't want to have this artificial 2:19, you have to run this time to get into our race. Or if you are not running 2:40, you're not getting any bottle support type of concept. No, we want to be as inclusive as we can for the purpose of it. But we have to have a standard of time, because if we have as many people as I think we could have, we need to limit how many times the men are lapping the women. And we want to make sure that everybody has equal opportunity to run the tangent line. So that's why we have chosen 245 and 225 as our standard for this event. We have equal times of the half marathon of 108.30 and 118 on the women's and the men's half, or the men's and the women's half. And then anyone who can prove fitness with a shorter distance time at a 5K and a 10K and a 10 mile, 15K, they would then contact us to prove that fitness. And the window of that time, time standards is January 1st of 2021 to August of 2023. So we got a big window of what it is you've done, but also time now to get there by the beginning of August. There's still time. I've had some people reach out to, hey, I'm a 228 marathoner. Can I run your race? If you haven't qualified yet, you're half, your 10 mile, your marathon isn't quite to what we're looking for. But I promise you, if you can prove fitness inside of now until then with a half marathon or a 10 mile, you have a guaranteed entry into our race.
I love it, because the last thing you want to do is overcrowd the course.
Yeah.
And you're going to basically defeat the purpose of what you're going after. You want to give people the best chance they can to run their fastest, to be a time trialer, as you said, and not have a lot of congestion, not a lot of crashing. We don't want people cutting each other off, trying to be on the tangent line.
Yeah.
So too many people isn't a good thing. And having a standard is clear. You got to be there. And if so, I'm sure, like anything else, if somebody were super close and you got to late in the stage when you're making your final decisions, a couple of bodies here or there, you might make a call if, you know, you thought somebody was really, really there on the edge and, you know, maybe you could accommodate them. You probably would, right?
Yeah, we're going to be pretty hard line to these standards, because we want to make sure that we are treating everybody fairly. I want to make sure Heather Peck, who is the co-race director with me, we want to ensure that when we are talking to people, that it's the same conversation, that we're not playing favorites to anyone that we serve or to anybody that is outside of our system. Oh, they just got this because of X. We want to ensure fairness and equal opportunity for anybody. So we're going to be pretty hard-lined to the standards that we have, very hard-lined. We recognize that there might be people out there that choose our race as the backup. Maybe they are registered for Chicago, right? But what happens if you're trying to qualify for the Olympic trials and Chicago turns out to be Chicago weather from 2021? Are you really wanting to give your OTQ away to the Chicago weather? Or would you rather wait a week and look at our race as the go-to, right? Because we could have much better weather. But I say that, and I also say this, we also recognize that we might not have the best weather, because any marathon could have rough weather.
Of course.
And that's why we chose October 14th for a reason. We don't want this to be the last chance. We want this to be an opportunity. So that still gives athletes an opportunity at Indianapolis, at Philadelphia Marathon, and at CIM.
Yeah. So they've got other swings that they can take.
Yeah.
In other courses. And, you know, obviously we know what happened in New York last year too with the weather. So yeah, it's the game we're in. But if you start early, I can have it run there, but I've seen a lot of pictures. It certainly looks shaded. So if you're starting early and you have shade, it should really be able to deliver. The only thing you can't control, of course, is when you get the crushing humidity. And that's gonna mess with anybody's opportunity. Doesn't mean that people aren't going to go down swinging, man, and they're not going to put everything they have into it. We certainly hope they
I just had an athlete out in the run the Durban International Marathon out in South Africa. And man, it was 70 some odd degrees. It was a 69, 71 dew point. The wind was howling at 20 to 25 miles an hour. And we knew he was much more fit, but it didn't, like, we planned for it. We adjusted for it. The dude still ran a 2:10:10, right? Like, you can still run fast as long as you make the appropriate adjustments. And we're going to ensure that we have everything as much controllable action as we can possibly have. We're going to ensure that we do what we can to ensure everybody has the best experience possible.
Love it. And, you know, with that kind of course, so you said 8.8 or 8.9 loops around for signage, you know, you have all these different standards that you're going to have people shooting for, the pacers, et cetera. I mean, you could have signs. I mean, how many racers have we seen with the markings on the forearms and the wrists and the hands, you know, with Sharpies? I mean, you could have big signs for any of those time goals where when they're coming through loop one, loop two, loop three, have a maybe different color code. Hey, man, I'm just spitballing. But I just know for me, if that was my number and I was putting everything I had into this cycle and I'm going for something big like that, if I were going by there and I'd have to be looking at my Coro specifically and just be like, that's my number right there. I know I need to be at 226 when I pass this on this loop and I'm 30 seconds ahead. That's my little buffer. So, I mean, I don't know if that's even tenable, possible.
Actually,
those are support things that maybe that was, just us, our local running community, could help you out with, maybe, you know?
That was a concept I spoke about with Heather, Coach Heather Peck, about 7-10 days ago, because I experienced that at the New Market Marathon in October of 2015 with a buddy. I was pacing a buddy. I was a pacer for that race. And at certain mile markers, they said, if you are at this marker at this time, you are running this pace. So that is something that we are absolutely going to be doing for this. So because it's not an even 3.0 mile course, it's 2.945. We're not going to have every mile marker with a clock. You would have 26 different mile markers.
Yeah.
So we're going to have every lap. If you are at this point, starting your lap at this time, it equals this pace. So they will know exactly where they need to be.
Yeah. That's the best way to tackle it. I mean, this is your life, man, coaching elite athletes or semi-elite athletes, or even just people dreaming of maybe making a BQ one day. And man, if I get on my soapbox for one thing more than others, it's, man, go manual split and hit your damn watch, whether it's every 5K, every 5 miles. You go to these big city races like Tokyo or Chicago, there ain't no way in hell you're going to get accurate splits at certain points. May even out over the whole race. And my Tokyo numbers were so much better because, you know, we're plugging Team Coros all the way.
Yeah.
I ran with my Polar in 2019, I got like 27.38 miles. And this time I got like 26.3, like 26.38 or 39. Yeah. So it was a huge improvement. But either way, it's still always a good strategy. If you really are going to be looking down at that watch on your wrist and thinking that that's your guide, that your average pace per mile is this, but your miles aren't actually syncing up with where you really are, then you're basically looking at numbers that you can't trust. So, for this and at this level, you want to be as prepared as possible. Yeah. And, you know, so that we just want to make sure people have the best opportunity to succeed. So we're going to get ready to transition over for everybody who's still tuning in or enjoying the company here. Does anybody in the comments want to hit James up with a question about the race specifically, about the course, anything at all on standards, bottle service, pacers, whatever? You know, let us know, because I can see the comments. I see people joining, people coming and going, but let us know. And if not, we'll kind of transition over into a little bit more on the McCurdy side, on your team side.
Yeah,
James.
Yeah, we have one more. We haven't officially made the announcement yet, but we are going to be hosting a 10K.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are going to be hosting a 10K. That is going to be for the masses. That is going to be for anybody, regardless of ability. There's no standard. We want to encourage people to come. There's not a lot of fast 10Ks out there. There's a few local 5Ks. There's obviously a lot of half marathons and marathons. But for athletes who are running Indianapolis or New York or CIM or Houston, and they want to get in a really good race, a really good 10K, we wanted to provide an opportunity for everybody to race that day. So our 10K is currently under USA certification process. It will be a certified course. It's going to be a sanctioned event, just like our marathon is. So it's going to be under the same banner of USATF. And we're really excited about that opportunity for the masses to be able to go out there and run the best 10K that they've ever run. They can use it as a fitness test. They can come watch the marathon for a while or halfway through, get ready for their race, and then go run the 10K about 45 minutes after the marathon finishes.
I absolutely, so I'm giving you the hands for that, because I got to tell you, the 10K is a race that has died on the vine. With heat and with weather, and a thousand other reasons that I can give you from race directors and everybody else on down. I mean, half marathons are growing in popularity. Marathons are growing in popularity. Ultras are growing in popularity. What you don't see is a lot of opportunities to run other than the USATF championship races, like the Cherry Blossom 10 mile, the 15K, the 25, those odd championship distances, the 50Ks, they're USATF championships, but they're not out there for the mass runner. And I can tell you firsthand, there is not a fast 10K course anymore in the New York City area. If you're fit and doing exactly what you said, you're getting ready to build up. For me and Heather and other masters runners, the Chicago Age Group World Championship is coming up, you know, just right after that. Perfect time. Even if you didn't want to go 100% all out, you could run it hard as a hard tempo. Use it as a great like last tune-up, because I think your race is a week before, right?
Do I have it the other way around? Our race is a week after. Chicago, week after. But it's, you know, it's still valid. It's a good course. It's a good opportunity, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about teaming up with Backline. They're allowing this freedom to be able to make these choices. Without their help, I'm not sure what we would be doing to get this all done. So, it's a great opportunity for anybody to come out and race. And we didn't want, you know, in 2020, the lead up to the trials, man, it was... We were cheering on our neighbors. We were cheering on our teammates. We were cheering on the people that are in the local running community, the running stores. We were cheering on the people that were on Instagram that we follow. We were cheering on these people because we felt like we were a part of their story, that we were a part of their lives, that their success inspired us to find our success. And really, that's kind of the idea behind this event. And we wanted to not forget that it's not just about the elite runner or the sub-elite, the on-the-cusp runner trying to get to the trials. This is about everybody. You know, what we find is if we can be as inclusive as possible, then everybody wins. Everybody wins. We have to have some limitations in the marathon specifically because of the nature of the event, but come run a fast 10K. You know, come out and watch people really strive for something that they have given and devoted their lives to for the last 5, 6, 8 years. For some of them even longer than that. And then be inspired and then go run your best 10K. Be inspired and then dream about what it might take to for you to get out to run for the 2028 trials that we're gonna have that are for LA. Right? Like Chiara D'Amato, and yes, she was a great runner in college, but she took so much time away from the sport. You know, she didn't come out of nowhere, but she came from humble beginnings in this second chapter of her life. Right? And now she's run the second fastest American marathon, former American record holder in history. Right? I mean, so There's possibility that can be derived from watching others find success and then you finding inspiration to find your own.
No, so well said. I mean, seeing these men and women run that fast. I mean, in Tokyo, the cool part about the course just keeps whipping around. Yeah. You know, you're going this way, you're coming back, and you know, just seeing the elite men and women go by. You know, there aren't that many races other than London. You know, I remember when Kipchoge and Mo Farah had, you know, their showdown that one year, because I saw Mo go by and the crowd was going wild. And I'm like, oh my God, is he ahead of Kipchoge? But Kipchoge had already gone by him. But like, you don't really get to see them running in full stride, in full speed, that deep into a race and just literally have your jaw drop. Because, you know, you do, you know, coaching, you know, amazing athletes and being out in Flagstaff and seeing Nazalit and the other teams that are out there training all the time. You get to see it maybe, but most of us don't. And it's pretty freaking inspiring for sure. And, you know, seeing people of all these different age groups come together and chase a dream and a goal, it does help us all look at, hey, maybe I could set my own bar a little bit higher. Maybe I could start running shorter distances faster again. Maybe I'll focus on track for a little while or cross country or something else. Because, look, there's always something else to put your focus on and energies on, to try to redirect and be more successful with your own running and get more out of the experience.
Yeah. I mean, I'm working with an athlete right now, Crystal Harris, who I started working with her at the end of 2016. So we've just passed 7 years or going on 7 years. We're just starting our 7th year. So we just passed 6 years together, and she's in her mid 40s now. Sorry, Crystal, I'm saying it. But I tell you what, I've never seen her run better, ever. And she's been up and down. And one of the things that she wanted to try to do when she first started with me was qualify for the trials in the marathon. And inside of the first year, she had so many issues. She actually came on board and we didn't even know, but she already had a double pelvic fracture. So like, we started with like cross training. Maybe 9 months later, she was running a 5K and she had to walk run it and barely finished. And she said, you know, I'm going to quit. And we had a good, honest conversation about it. And it's weird that was, you know, six some odd years ago, because she did end up going on to qualify for the Olympic trials. And now the things that she's doing now, 4 years later, is light years faster than she's ever been. It's unreal. Like, she's doing workouts now in her mid 40s as a master's runner that she was never capable of doing when she was in her 20s, or certainly her 30s, or certainly when she qualified for the trials in 2020. And it hasn't been this linear path. It's been this up and down. But man, just being around her is inspirational for me. You know, it's inspirational for me because it allows me to think that I've had my rough go. I've had a lot of injury issue. Some weird things happen with my feet. I've had COVID more times than I can count, and I'm struggling with it right now. And having people on my side that I'm guiding, but also are providing some inspiration to me is beautiful. It's wonderful.
Yeah. We're blessed, man. So let's shift phase two.
Yeah.
That's the race. Exciting stuff. But, you know, you and I haven't actually had the chance to chat about McCurdy. So for me, the first thing I always want to know is, man, I want to know the origin story, man. How did it come to be? Like, where did the thought come from? And like, how did you pull it together? Like, how did it all start?
It started in 2015. I was working, I was in between jobs. I was just about to start a new job, but I left another job and I came out to Flagstaff, honestly, for a running vacation with another business, with the Run Smart Project, which is now VDOT. And I had a great experience, great time. I reached out to a prominent up-and-coming coach named Ben Rosario, who just came out with a book called Tradition Class Pride. With his high school coach, they wrote a book together. And we sat and grabbed a cup of coffee, and we had a good chat about coaching and running. And I bought his book from him for $20. And he said, you know, towards the end of the conversation, he's like, you know, you could start an online coaching service. You'd probably be pretty good at this. And I kind of poo-pooed the idea because I was just about to start a job. And I was starting a job at Fleet Feet in West Hartford. And the job, when I went back, you know, I was working hard, but the job it wasn't what I was expecting it to be. And I was having a really hard time personally. Essentially, I had a nervous breakdown, crying in my office with a coworker who was also an athlete of mine. It wasn't long before I was just fired. And I was so embarrassed about it. I couldn't talk about it. Couldn't tell my girlfriend at the time. I was too embarrassed to even talk to her about it. And she'd wake up, she'd go to work, and I'd say, have a good day. I'll see you when I'm home from work. And I just sit on my couch and I just cry because I was so defeated. That was a really hard time, and I needed to find ways to pay my bills. And I just reached out to a few people that I live near locally, to train for a 5K. I had been coaching. I'd been running. I was a personal trainer for many, many years. I was always a coach in some respects since like 2001. It had always been in me. And it was like the one thing I felt like, man, if I could just do this, I'd be happy. You know, I would do it to volunteer. I would do it. And I did. And so when I reached out to some folks, I said, well, I got to start paying my bills a little bit. So I'll charge you this, I'll charge you that. And then when I had 10 people, I said, well, I got to pay taxes on this because I'm making too much just off of that little. So I might as well just start my own business. So I did. And I reached out, got Ben's wife, Jen, to develop my website, McCurdyTrain.com at the time. And January 6th, 2016 was day one. And it was purely out of necessity. Because I don't know what else I would have done. I don't know what I was going to do with the rest of my life, but I knew I had this passion to coach and to do this. I just didn't know how I was supposed to do it. So I just tried to create it. And it wasn't long after where that person I cried in her office, it wasn't long after before I hired her as my first coach. And then someone else, and then someone else, and then someone else. And by the end of year one, we had like 9 coaches. We were working regionally in the Northeast at the time in Connecticut and in Massachusetts, New Jersey. We were regionally around 150 athletes. And now, you know, we've grown quite a bit. We've grown over the last 7 years, we're one of the largest coaching services, if not the largest coaching service in the country, if not the world, doing what it is we do with one-on-one training.
That's awesome, man. I mean, but sometimes we have to hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
To find what we're really meant to do in life and just be at that breaking point, if you will, which literally you were. And sure, who wants to share that with anybody? We don't. That's not the kind of stuff you want to share with anybody.
Yeah.
So they're tough conversations, you know, but running helps us open up, man. Running helps us figure this shit out and deal with stress and anxiety. And God knows how many people I've talked to on my show with alcohol, drugs, suicide, and so many other things, postpartum depression and everything else along the way. And people have gone from those lows to remarkable accomplishments in life, not just as runners, but as human beings, because that's really what's a hell of a lot more important than, you know, what our 10K time is. Although we all like a fast 10K time, right?
Yeah, it'd be nice to run. You know, at first, the first few years, really the first year and a half, 2 years, I really thought the success of McCurdy Train was going to be based on what I did as an athlete. And it took me a while to figure out that nobody gave a shit what I did as an athlete. They don't care. What they care about and what I hope I present, because I'm human, I fail from time to time, but what I hope I keep in mind and I try to be consistent as I possibly can, is that I do care about the people that I'm coaching, that we care about the people that we are serving. That's what they care most about. They don't care about how fast your coach is, or, you know, it's cool. Like, yeah, we've got some really fast coaches and I coach some really fast people that coach for us. And it's awesome. But when it comes down to it, they want somebody that cares about them. They want somebody that knows that, hey, you know, last week I had a husband and wife who were diagnosed with COVID, and that I'm going to be pretty rigid about their comeback because I do actually care about them getting healthy over the next workout that they're running. Or, you know, that my athlete Rhonda, who's been working her ass off for years to run a lifetime best in the half marathon, but just never had a chance because every half marathon she ran for the past few years has been in terrible weather, either hot and humid or terrible wind. And she finally goes out there, even in some severe wind at Shamrock Rock and Roll Half in Virginia Beach a few weeks ago. And she broke 136 for the first time. She blew past 135 and ran 134.52. You know, the athletes need to know, and they want to know, that you're paying attention to the best of your ability. And I didn't really quite understand that for the first few years, but now it hits me. Doesn't mean I'm perfect. You know, I'm going to make my mistakes. I'm going to get lost in some things from time to time, but it's, you know, I've got people that help ground me too. And my wife, my one of my best friends, Heather Knight Peck, one of my best friends, John Ranieri, Esther Atkins, who's my own coach. And I pay just like everybody else does. It's good to have the right people in your corner. And I'm really, really proud of where it is we've come from as an organization, but I'm really honored to have the people that I have beside me.
So you got the Heathers to keep you in line. It's dueling
Heathers. Yeah, I often say I've got two really important Heathers in my world, my wife and the queen.
Yeah, and you don't want to cross either one of them, I can tell you.
No.
Definitely not. Well, look, I think at the end of the day, what does an athlete really need? You know what I mean? Like, what do they really need? And, you know, what I talk about on my shows when I have a guest looking across me on a Zoom screen, I enjoy them so much more when we're in the same room together, because then we can share minds or whatever, you know? But the truth is, it's the communication. That's really what it is. You can strip all the other shit away, because God knows you can download 4,000 different kinds of training programs with X number of key workouts per week and double thresholds and 63 other variations of what's new and what flavor of the month. But at the end of the day, if you don't feel like you can pick the phone up and call Heather Peck and say, "Hey, Heather, I actually need to talk to you tonight," or "James, can you spare 20 minutes for me tomorrow morning after I drop my kid off at school, because I have to talk to you." And it's usually not about the X's and O's. It's usually about some important life event, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably, it had to have played a role for you as you guys have built this thing to the size and scale that it is and the success it is. It has to have played a role in you getting so many more coaches to come and join your network and so many more athletes and being so successful, right?
Yeah, I mean, every inquiry that comes in, unless they've already spoken to a coach privately, like on Instagram, or they just bumped into them or something, every inquiry that comes in And there's been thousands over the years. Every single one, I get it. I shoot him a text, say, hey, it's James McCurdy from McCurdy Trains. When can we chat? You got free 15 minutes? You got time now? Do you want to chat in a few hours? And every single one. It's important to me to have that first mode of contact, that it's not just this automatic, robotic reply. It's, I'm going to talk to you while I'm at the grocery store. I'm going to talk to you while I'm getting gas. I'm going to talk to you in between my athlete sessions or while my athletes are at the gym that I coach in person here at Flagstaff, that there is this communication that is there. And that coaching, in my definition and our coaches' definitions, even though our coaches all have different personalities, we don't all coach the same way. I don't manipulate how they serve. I trust them. I don't have to micromanage them. Again, doesn't mean that we're perfect, but I do trust them as people. And I rarely have to be like, what was that workout? Right? Like almost rarely. Right. So the idea is, in my definition of coaching, is that you have somebody that is looking out for what your development is. To me, coaching isn't about here's 3 months, good luck, or just do this, or yay, good job. It's how did this feel? What were you experiencing? What was the weather like? What shoes were you wearing? How was, you know, what was happening? What did you feel in recovery? I often ask my athletes that, what was recovery feeling like for you? Because that will tell me how they actually felt in the session, depending on what it is, what the specific workout is. And it promotes conversations that aren't yes and no. It promotes conversations that are actually needing an answer, so we can understand what their experience really is. And that's what I think coaching is. I don't believe coaching is about just giving a plan and here you go. That's a plan. And so when someone says, oh, what do your training plans look like? I have no idea because I don't know you yet. You know, we got 1,000 plus, almost 1,100 athletes around the world, and every one of them has a different concept. There might be some similarities from time to time, but everyone I'm with has a different concept because of what's going on in their life. Like Adele, my athlete Adele, who lives in Ireland. She's 46. She's coming out to Boston. We're going to meet for the first time after me working with her for 4.5, 5 years. We're getting a chance to meet for the first time on Friday morning before Boston next week. And I'm really excited. But man, like she's had these up and downs, right? And she got COVID like 2 months, 3 months ago. And we've had to like really adjust. And she said, oh, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do it in Boston. I said, let's just wait. Let's just get through this, and then we can move and move and move forward. And man, she's crushing it. She's crushing it. A pre-made plan can't do that. A pre-made plan is just here, go do the workouts, and you know, I'll touch base with you in a few months. I don't see it. It doesn't mean that that's not appropriate for some people who want that. But my definition, our definition of coaching is this, is communication.
Yeah, it's so key. And I think collectively as a team, you know, Instagram gives us this ability, right, for us to do this live chat right here that will stay out there. That video will be up for us if somebody wants to hear about this race and understand what makes this course unique. Yeah. This is going to be the best opportunity, but yeah. It stays on. But also the connections that these runners form that are running for you, the Masters ladies, the Masters men, the different country athletes, we all have a way of just saying, oh, I'm going to connect with her or him, or she's in a similar path that I'm on, or he's doing something that I have, or he just came back from an injury like me. So then we just have a way, we gravitate towards those people, and then we connect. So then we root for them, they root for us, and then you're all wearing the McCurdy logo or the Central Park Track Club logo or whatever. Yeah. And then it helps, man, because you have that collective energy of everybody pulling to root for success.
Yeah. Someone just popped on, and I'm not sure if she's still on, but her name's Christine. And Christine was with us for many years. She, her husband, her brother-in-law, sister-in-law, like the family, right? And Christine, very specifically, is running Boston in a few weeks. And she had been working with Esther for a very, very long time, but her season of life passed. But she might not know that I know, but she's raising money for cancer. She's in a charity, you know, it's awesome to see that she's going to be out there running Boston for something greater than herself. And, you know, without this service, I would never have known that she was going to be doing that. You know, well, I would never have been as I want to say, because it's not like we text back and forth. She wasn't my athlete. She was Esther's. But and I don't know if they still text, but I'm aware of what she's doing now because of our experience from the years past. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Go, Christine. We see you. and your athlete from Ireland. Hey, when's your shakeout? Because I know you you put an invite up.
Yeah.
When's your shakeout? Because shakeouts are literally, they're the most fun. I mean, I had one in Tokyo and it was just wild, man. It was it was so much fun, man. It's just so crazy that we just come together, man. People from all over the globe, all different ages. It doesn't matter where you're from. People just come and they want to hang. And you just get to relax a little before you get on that starting line and take that deep breath of like, oh shit, here we go. It's up. But we need more. So when's your shakeout? And let's spread the word on that too.
Yeah, our shakeout. We're teaming up with On Running. You know, Heather and I lost our house in a fire 6 months ago, a little over 6 months ago. And it was unfortunately my fault. It was a candle I forgot to blow out and came back and the house is covered in smoke and we pretty much we lost everything. And On Running heard about it and privately sent us clothing. We had 5 bags from Target. We had nothing. You know, we had friends here in town that were helping us, but we were living in a hotel room until the insurance would get their shit together and find us a place to live. And we're still not back in the house. And On Running, you know, we didn't know what our life was going to look like. On Running literally sent us shoes and jackets and shirts and daily clothes and running clothes. They stepped up in a way and showed us immeasurable kindness in a great need. So we wanted to say thank you to them and partner with them. And this is the best way that we could team up with them and say thank you and partner with them for the Boston Shakeout. But we're teaming up with, it's going to be held at Trend Boston, 351 Newberry Street, Sunday morning at 8 a.m. All right. We're teaming up with Trend. That's the host location. They got some great gear, Saucony On. They carry On as well. A great daily wear clothing. We got some pretty big surprises coming with On that will be announced over the next few days. I can't wait for that to happen, but I'm not allowed to say it just yet. And then Runner's World Mag is going to be there as well. So the four of us On Runner's World, Trend, and McCurdy Trend, we're going to be sharing space together Sunday morning, 8 a.m. Meet, talk, chat the race, go for a jog, come back and spend some time together.
Love it. Hell of a plan. So
yeah,
you know, I'm in stress fracture mode myself right now. Otherwise I would be there with leading and taking 4,000 selfies on the run.
Yeah.
I am certainly going to be cleared to, you know, be out, you know, I'm already on my feet now and doing stuff like that. I'll certainly be cleared to be up there. It's just a question of if that works out timing wise.
Yeah.
And I know that I would also be cleared to be riding a bike by then. So I wanted to see, you know, I always stay at the Four Seasons on Boylston just because it's right down the street.
Yeah.
It's right across from the It's just such an epic location and they're just such a great hotel anyway. If I could work it out that I get up there, because I just can't. I haven't missed a Boston since 2016. So to not race is one thing, but to just miss it, Kipchoge's running for Christ's sakes. I mean, come on.
It's gonna be possible.
So I'll have to see if I can get up there, maybe bike around and just hit a couple of your shakeout and a few other friends as well.
Yeah, it'll be quite possibly setting up to be the fastest Boston in Boston's history, weather pending.
Yeah, we always got to do that caveat for sure. Now, do you have a lot of athletes running Boston?
We do.
A lot of people.
Yeah. So in 2016, you know, a few months after I started, I had 8 athletes in Boston. But this year we have pretty close to 250.
Which
is great. Yeah. I think we had more athletes. So many of them are first time Boston marathoners, or repeat Boston marathoners. It's kind of fun. We're starting now to track how many BQs we get every season. And it's in the hundreds, you know, every season, which is awesome. So to gather with everybody, you know, anyone who's not that all 250 are going to come to the shakeout, they'll have other plans, right? They have friends, family, when they arrive, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if we get 150 of our athletes there in person, it'd be just great to be able to see people for the first time, for some of my own athletes like Adele. You know, everyone's welcome, you know, whether they're with us or not. You know, it's family, friends, different clubs, different teams. We don't care. We just want to help people. We just want to help people run the best race possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've learned about the origin story, philosophy, some really cool things, and 250 athletes PQing. What about on the OTQ side? How many do you have at this point on the OTQ side?
We've served, I think, 11 athletes that have qualified for the Olympic trials. It's one of the larger programs out there. Roots Running has 7 or 8. I think Hanson's has like 12 or 13. Yeah, they're crushing it right now. The Hanson's Brooks project, they're really doing well. We have more athletes going, not at Boston for the OTQ. We have a few, but more athletes of ours will be at Glass City, New Jersey, a little bit more contained of a course. And then I think we'll have 18 to 20 professional level, sub-elite level athletes in Grandmas. And probably half of them will be aiming for their OTQ or that level of running or faster.
And you have the McCurdy Micro, so you'll probably have some there. And
yeah.
CIM, sure, will have some as well, right?
In 2020, with our coaches included, we had 25 athletes qualify for the trials. I served 14 of them, coaches and athletes. And that was the largest team that I'm aware of that had a presence at the Olympic trials in 2020. So it's a goal of mine to help as many people qualify in 2024, because I want to see our organization serve as many, you know, or as close to as many as possible, even with the standards that are that much higher. And I think we can do it. I really think we have the people in place, and we're seeing the development. My athlete Maura, you know, she just ran a 12-year PR in the half marathon. She just broke 75 minutes for the first time. Mother of three, right? In between those 12 years was three kids, and she just ran a 74:52. And we'll be taking a swing at Grandma's as well. So I think we're seeing the development to get to the trials. We're seeing the development to and the belief. You know, I like to say that realists are boring. You know, don't come to me with your realism. Like, I don't care about your realism. That's so boring. Come to me with your dreams, because that's just exciting. That's what we want to see. That's what we want to talk about. You know, so I really think we're going to see a big upswing over the next 6 to 9 months, leading into the trials. You get even more people there.
Love it, man. Hey, man, we don't get out of bed for the simple basic stuff, man.
Yeah.
We want to hear the interesting stories. And hell, man, you know, you have athletes, you know, just share them between you and me. You get an interesting story, somebody like you just mentioned, Maura, send her over my way, man. She's got a spot on my pocket anytime. You know that. Yeah. That's just, it may not happen, you know, in 1 week or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
100%. It's a done deal. Those are the kind of conversations I want to host, man. And,
what's fun too about Maura is she's a McCurdy trained paying athlete, but she represents her own club. You know, she's not on our elite team. She's got her own team that she, you know, her and her husband and her teammates. And, you know, it's not just about us. It's about, I've got athletes on the BAA, got athletes on the Atlanta Track Club. We got athletes on Philadelphia Runner. It's about getting them and representing their teams as well.
Oh, hell yeah, man. It's all about the collective, man. It's the community. That's what it's all about. And that's what this event is all about. You know, you're trying to give people that are on that fringe area, that have that huge dream, that have something that's just firing them up, man. It's still burning deep in there. And, you know, you're going to give them a chance to put them on a course where they have the absolute best chance to make that dream a reality. And to me, that's the kind of thing that fires me up, man.
What someone a little while ago was a little unsure if he wanted to continue chasing the dream. And I said, you know, the real answer to that question is, what happens on February 5th when you wake up the day after the Olympic trials? Are you going to have regret not even trying for it? You know, like, if you're going to regret not even have tried for it, then yeah, let's get to work. We got some shit to do. But if you can answer honestly that you don't even care, well, then don't bother. Yeah. It's not a passion of yours. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But if you want to give it a go, let's go.
Yeah. And look, there's always, and you know this, coaching amazing athletes like Heather, and with the broad base of athletes that you have, from the Olympic trials level to 250 BQ athletes, there's always something that's going to fire you up and inspire you. You got to figure out what that is. It has nothing to do with what fires me up. or James or your friend or your training buddies. It has something to do with what's going to fire you up. So it doesn't matter if all your girlfriends qualified for Boston, so you think you should, or, you know, everyone else is running a marathon, man, you got to figure out what is going to get you inspired to get the hell out of bed and get the work done. Yeah. Or run it not after a 14-hour shift at work when you're exhausted. Are you going to have enough juice to throw those sneakers on and put your gear on and force yourself out the door, man? Because 10 minutes after you do, you will be happy. You will not be regretting that you went out for that run, but you will be like, I can breathe. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm in this there's run a healthy now, line. And I'm in my safe space.
There's a healthy line for that. Absolutely. There's also a line for, you know what? Take the night and rest. But there is absolutely a healthy line to understand what's really driving your passion.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. So this has been super fun, man. But I got it. We got to at least get a little bit of insight from you on Boston, the elite.
Oh, yeah.
Before we roll out of here, man, because this is our thing, man. So what do you think, man? This is it, man. Kipchoge's actually going to be there. We know what this dude has done. I mean, it's unbelievable, man. And, you know, there's people out there. You know how it is. There's haters on everybody. Even people that can hate Kipchoge, which is hard as that might be to believe. But people trying to say he can't run a hill course and all this other stuff. And I'm just like shaking my head going, okay.
We're going to find out.
Yeah.
We're going to find out. What I will say is this. He is in the driver's seat because of the tactics of the race, being that there's no pacers on the men's side, right? He's in the driver's seat. But he's human. And one of the things that he has the advantage on flat courses, time trial type courses, they're set up for him to find success. They're not allowing Klaus on the Boston Marathon to give him bottles.
Yes.
Like, it's not happening. Not to my knowledge.
Yes. He said, I don't think so anyway.
Right. It's its own event. And I don't think he's going to go into it with arrogance, but he could. He's deserving to. He's the greatest marathoner in history. I think he's going to go into it with reverence and respect of what that course could do to somebody. He very well has the talent to run the fastest time ever because he's the best marathoner in the world. But a lot of things still need to go right. And one thing that he might not be accustomed to is nutrition intake through a course that has the Newton Hills. That's a different element. Now, his level of tolerance of speed allows him to slow down a little bit and still be that much faster than everybody else and still take nutrition. But what happens if it's headwind? What happens if it's more humid than he's used to? What happens on a lot of things? And this is true for any level of athlete. Life happens on Boston, and life happens fast, and it can hit you like a Mack truck. So we'll find out soon. You know, there's no guarantee of anything. I think he's probably obviously the favorite to win, but it really wouldn't surprise me if he didn't either.
Yeah, I think, you know, it would be an upset if he doesn't win, but it's not going to be a massive upset. Even with his basic record of winning virtually every single race, including all his and almost never ever actually losing. It still is a different type of course. It's not a course he's run before. Although if you read, and I read everything I can about Kipchoge because he's just like Yoda. So why not read everything you can about him? But I think the course he's trained on has set him up for that for years, even though he's not racing on a course like that. I think he's run the profile of that kind of course for years, but you're absolutely right. Tactics make a race. And
most East African
remember,
men.
James, let's go back to Yuki and you know, the year him and Des won. How many times did the announcer say, who is this dude, blah, 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 what's going on? They didn't even know who he was. And then he was back off the back for a while, and then he came back again. So just like you said, we don't know what kind of weather we're going to get. We have all kind of conditions. We also don't know if somebody's going to take it out at some crazy pace and maybe blow the race open.
Yeah.
So it's going to be wild to see for sure.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be scared about any pace that anybody else is going to go out at. But it doesn't mean that it's not going to have the effect on someone's body, right? On the women's side, gosh, I don't know. You know, I really don't. I don't know what to expect out of that. Like, what we see, like, and I'll go back to the men for a moment. Scott Faubel was ranked like 27th a few years ago, and he finished like 7th place. So like, you can't go by rankings, you can't go by time. It's not, the time gets you into the race at the professional level, but it doesn't matter what your time is, because you still have to race it, you still got to run it, you have to be prepared for it. And Scott should not have led the race when he finished 7th. He was leading the race at some point, you know, like he had no business doing it, but he went out there and he said, screw it, I'm going to go run the best race possible. And he did. You know, a few years ago, I had a 43-year-old woman named Kate Landau in Boston in 2019, that year that Scott led the race. And, you know, Kate wasn't ranked in the top 20 of that race. I don't think she was ranked in the top 30. She finished 13th. She won the Masters race, but she finished 13th at 43 years old. It was her lifetime best of 231.56. She beat Sarah Hall, right? There's no guarantee just because someone has run X that they're going to do this in Boston. You have to run it. And anything could happen. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a few athletes that are ranked 25th to 35th on men and women's side. I really wouldn't be surprised if they finish in the top 10. And that goes from Americans to international. I really wouldn't be surprised if we see some American women from 10th to 15th break into the top 10 of this race. So, yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah, and history has shown us, too, that experience on the Boston course is a very valuable thing to have, either as a really elite amateur or a top runner or at the pro level. So, the profile of that course, you know, people just always think it's an easy course. It's downhill because of elevation and everything. They clearly have never run the course themselves. So
yeah. I think the biggest mistake that anybody makes is they say, oh, it's an easy marathon. Oh, it's this. Marathons are hard. I don't care if you're running a downhill race. A downhill race is devastating. I don't care if you're running New York. New York is hard. Boston is hard. Doesn't mean that it can't be fast. You just have to run it smart for your capabilities and within your strengths as a runner, right? Arrogance in Boston can cost you.
Oh, yeah. That pays a serious toll. And we just had a McCurdy join us. McCurdy Sean.
My brother saying he can run a 3-minute mile. My brother, yeah.
We got Sean McCurdy in the house. I can run a 3-minute mile. Of course you can. Absolutely, dude. Take it out. Do you remember the old races? When like New York City was on like ABC and some dude would be out there leading the men, you know, like for like, I don't know, not even a half mile or a mile in the Verrazano, then they would just like disappear. Yeah. It was just like their way to get on TV. It doesn't really happen much anymore. Well, it doesn't happen because the way they set the elite fields up at the start, but it used to happen in the old days, man. That was some funny shit.
It happened a few years back in Boston. Bronson Venable, I think he's from Rhode Island or Massachusetts. He took it out in the first 5K in Boston. He was leading the first 5K in Boston. That's when they had, you know, the men starting basically with the masses, right? And man, that was funny. That was hysterical. Like he had no, I think he ran like a 14:40 opening 5K. It was a pedestrian for the professional men, but he was cranking.
That's awesome. Well, we got Wildflower Alley checking in. 3+ years, still trying to work for my first marathon. My coach still has faith in me. Love the whole gang at McCurdy. Not giving up just yet.
Oh, I love it.
Joining. Thanks for joining, Allie. You know, that's what we want, man. Never give up. And hey, you can't really see my sign behind me, my stay in the fight sign.
Oh, shit.
That's the mantra. That's the mantra for my podcast, the mantra for my running, my life, et cetera. So, yeah, it's all about it, man. We don't give up. We stay in it, baby. Yeah. Stay in the fight. That's what it's all about.
I love it. I have from Crystal, when Crystal was crossing the line at CIM in 2019 or 2018, when she crossed the line, one of the things that just came out of my mouth was, yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And it was pouring out. And she made me a nice sign, you know, a little hand carved sign that was a Christmas gift a bit later than that. And it was, when you have those mantras and they're meaningful to you, you know, they actually mean something to you. That's power. It's not just, I found this in a book and it was great and I really liked the way it sounded. No, the mantra is something that actually means something, something that evokes passion from within and you let out. And And that, you know, when you stay in the fight for you, right, that means, that very clearly means something for you with the way you just said it. You know, I think, you know, when folks are trying to give their best, trying to find their best, trying to find a way to persevere through the adversity that we all end up facing, whether it's internal or spoken out loud, it's got to be something that that matters and that, that does evoke that that passion.
So well said. And just as someone made that sign for you, this a good buddy of mine, Tim, one of my running buddies, he made that sign for me and he made it Boston theme because of my many years running there, starting from 1995. So I'll tell you, James, it's been so fun, man. Is there anything else we didn't get to, man? Anything we didn't cover? Maybe an athlete story, anything you want to like, finish up with? I mean, because, you know, we could always catch up another time and do a regular, more traditional podcast. But if there's anything else, man, we still got people tuned in, man. So we can.
Yeah. No, I think we've got everything. You know, if you're on and you're in Boston, come to the Shakeout Sunday, 351 Newberry Street, Trend, at 8 a.m. If you're on and you're trying or you're hearing this later and trying to qualify for the trials and you're looking for a race, the McCurdy Micro, the Backline McCurdy Micro Marathon is going to be October 14th, 2023. And registration for that, we're planning for that to launch next week. So we still have a few things left to do on the website and create a few things and make logos fit onto the website. But outside of that, we should be ready to roll pretty soon with the registration. So spread the word and let as many people as you know about our event, about our race, and hopefully we'll see you at the starting line in October as well.
Yeah, great stuff. And yeah, once you get your final artwork, once you get a registration link, all of those stuff, I can push it in stories. I can push it out in many different channels, many different ways, just so people can see it. And the cool thing with IG Live is this lives on. So anybody who I see, my good friend Julie just joined, former podcast guest, your friend Wildflower Alley is just saying how it made her day. She had a rough day at work. Like, even if you came in late, you can still watch this and hear it. And I'm also, for anybody who's just popping in now, it's probably going to take a couple of weeks, maybe 2-3 weeks, but I'm going to push this out as a podcast. The audio won't be as clean and as perfect as my normal shows because it's Instagram recording with regular me talking into my iPad and however James is doing his thing. But at some point, we'll get James on for a straight up sit down. We'll do the real McCoy with the awesome audio gear and we'll make the perfect sound, man. So we'll definitely make that happen in the future for sure.
Awesome. Thanks so much for the time, Ryan. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, man, it's been my pleasure. Awesome. Get to spend the evening with you. And thank you to every single person who checked in. I tried to wave to every single person. I hope that wasn't too distracting there, James. But I just think it's so nice that people come in. If you take some time and spend a couple of minutes with me and James, you definitely deserve a hello. You deserve a thank you. So God bless you all. All the best with your running, man. Everybody run in Boston, get up there and get the fuck after it, man. Go chase that shit down. And whatever else, whatever you got on your calendar, man, if you're doing London, if you got Chicago, you're going to do the McCurdy Micro, the Backline McCurdy Micro, whatever you got, man. Just give it all you got. Get after it. And hopefully I'm going to see you out there somewhere, man, because I want to meet more people. I want to get more people on the podcast, tell more stories, inspire more people. So let's make that happen. And there's my girl, Jane from Down Under. Thank you for tuning in. I got my Aussie connection. God bless, man. Love my Aussie people down there. We got the best people down there. Good stuff. All right, everybody. We say keep lacing them up. Keep getting out the door and always remember to stay in the fight.
That was a fun, interactive IG Live conversation that James and I had a while back. And just thought it'd be really helpful to share for any runners that are still chasing their OTQ dream and maybe haven't solidified where they're looking to run in the fall and what's going to give them that best opportunity to earn their place on the starting line February 3rd, 2024. We got into all the details about the race, and it was really fun to hear James's insights on the course, the why they put this together, and just really how they're wanting to help athletes get to that magical goal and place. And I really particularly enjoyed learning the McCurdy-trained origin story, how it all came to be, how much they've grown, the ethos and DNA that has helped them build such a strong and powerful team, a few athlete success stories, and I've hosted a bunch of his athletes and really enjoy those conversations as well. So this was a treat for me, and I hope you all enjoy it too. And for any runners out there that are looking to chase down that OTQ, please share it to them. For anybody who's considering hiring a coach, as an athlete, I think this is a really helpful listen for them. If they're evaluating potential coaching programs who they might want to consider, this could be really helpful. So thank you all for being so patient. It's been a few weeks. I lost my beautiful Princess Coco, and it's just been really hard to get back into the podcasting state of mind. But we are going to have to move on, as we all do when we lose somebody near and dear to our hearts. So this episode with James will help us bridge the gap, and we will get back to regular recorded episodes soon and start producing more content for you all. And again, I appreciate you all for hanging in there. So keep lacing them up, my friends. Keep getting out the door, and always remember to stay in the fight. Peace out.